Greetings and salutations. My name is Tyler Elenick, and this is Raven Drool, the podcast that chronicles 90s cam rock. In this episode, I chat with Malcolm Scott of London, Ontario's The New Grand.
All right, so there's not a whole lot of information about The New Grand on the internet.
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of the mystique, I suppose, because we existed kind of pre-internet, pre-cell phones, pre-all that stuff, right? So,
yeah, like as far as I can tell, the band existed before you, and then you joined it about 95 as a second guitar player. So maybe describe the music scene in your town around that time. What kind of led you to those guys?
I grew up in Eastern Ontario. Between Ottawa and Kingston, born in Smiths Falls, and went to high school there. And we had a couple of high school bands back in the day, I started the bands. I wrote most of the songs that were not covers. We were doing Nirvana stuff back then, and Teenage Fan Club maybe, and stuff like that. We'd go into Ottawa and go, me and my friends would go to Ottawa and see a lot of the bands that I've seen on your podcast, that kind of early 90s kind of scene. So in Ottawa, I remember seeing Cub and, bands from Montreal, Furnace Face and, Eric Strip and all those kind of bands that became kind of part of where, in my musical journey where it started. And then I ended up moving to, I finished high school in 1995 and I moved to London to go to university. So moved to London, Ontario. And I was, met some friends early on on campus. And one of my friends, her boyfriend was in a band in Cambridge. That's where she was from. And so she, was like, hey, we got invited to this party. So we go to this party. And I ended up meeting Mike Clive and Tim Smith, who were in the New Grand. So that was like probably in September of 95. I'd only been in London for a bit. Then I, we have, it's closed down now, but kind of famous London band, bar band was called The Office, where everybody played. I think it's probably pretty legendary, and probably any band that's traveled Canada has played Call The Office at some point. So I probably ran into those guys again, or ran into Mike, and then I'd heard through the grapevine that they were looking for a guitar player, and I'm like, hey, I play guitar. And, the band at the time practiced upstairs at Call The Office. So we went upstairs and, we kind of just messed around a bit. And I think he gave me probably a 7-inch or two that they might have had. And he's like, well, learn these. And so I was living in a residence on campus. And I had this like little, Fisher Price record player at the time. And I learned the songs. And went to a show probably at Call The Office, because, as soon as I came to London, I kind of just gravitated there because live music was my jam. So I ended up running into Mike and I said, hey, I learned those songs. And we went back upstairs and it turned out I learned them in the wrong key, but, switched up quickly. And then we did the whole band thing and I jammed with the guys, and so I was kind of in the band. So it was just, from September to like November or October, I was, I joined the New Grand. And they'd been around at that point at least a year and a bit. They were all friends in high school. They all went to the same high school originally with the original guitar player. And at the time they were called Trout, and they put out a 7-inch. They played a lot, and at some point, I think they were decided to change the name. It was just kind of, Trout was, I think they kind of probably agreed it was a dumb name. So somehow the New Grand became the name of the band, and then the original guitar player, Joel Hutchinson, he left, parted ways with the band. And they had a mutual friend named Runus, we call him, Matt Lawson, and he joined the band, I think, for the summertime, but really with the caveat that he was not going to stick around, because they'd committed to some shows, and I think one of them was probably the Halifax Pop Explosion. So the kind of big shows they wanted. So Runus kind of agreed to be the guitar player. And then, by September, I think it was his tenure was up, and they were looking for somebody. I just kind of fell into it. And so, practicing October, November, And my first show was at Call the Office early December, opening up for the Gandharvas. And I was like, wow, opening up for the Gandharvas. I was so, I mean, I was, you know, calling my friends back home, you know, because, you know, we probably had seen the Gandharvas in Ottawa. But just they were just a name. We never played out. We played outside of our back home, you know, small towns around. But we never played anything of with any shows or with bands of any note. So yeah, so it, you know, started with the band, and that was December '95, and then, you know, at that point they'd already kind of, fallen on the radar of Sonic Onion. So then, you know, they were kind of brought into, you know, I think we probably played you know, a Sonic Onion Christmas show in Ottawa, or sorry, in Toronto. I feel like that was that year, and at the Opera, or sorry, at the Lee's Palace. And then we just after Christmas, I went home for Christmas. Everybody lived in London, and I ended up you know, taking the train home Christmas, and then came right back, probably like Boxing Day, back to London, and then we drove out to Calgary. to record in Calgary. So we prior to my joining the band, the guys had met this guy named Dave Alcock, and he had come to London probably at Fanshawe or one of the recording schools, you know, to kind of record music. And so he worked at a studio in Calgary called Sunday Sound, which I think was owned by Ian Tyson, or Ian Tyson had some kind of connection to the studio. And over Christmas, everything's dead, so he kind of invited us out there to record some songs. So we drove out. We were initially like all packed into like in Tim's little, it was not a K car, but it was like something very small, where, you know, we were like packed in this small car, and we had like Mike's bass kind of laid across our lap in the back seat. We were going to drive to Calgary like this. It was kind of nuts. And then Mike's parents saw this, and they're like, "Wait a second, this is nuts." So they let us take their van. So we took the van, drove out to Calgary, and we were out there probably for the week between Christmas, New Year's, kind of probably around that time. And we recorded a couple of songs, which became, I believe they became songs on a 7-inch that we did at some point called, I don't even remember what it was called now. It was Ham Fisted and Banner Year, I think, were the songs that we recorded. And after that, we played tons of shows. There's a point, I feel like we were playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, and one day we'd be in Hamilton, or they'd be in Toronto, or we'd be in Windsor, or we'd be play a show in London, and we played all the time. And then on top of that, we were practicing, and then I'm in school, Tim's in school. Actually, I think all of us might have been in school at that point, except for Mike, but we were just all kind of just playing around and doing lots of shows, and. You know, and then it was time to start kind of working on an album, because Sonic Onion wanted to release an album with us. So we did, we're working on writing new stuff, and we pulled out some old songs from even before my time, and that we recorded in the spring of '96 at Mike's house at his parents' house with Brendan McGuire. And Brendan McGuire kind of was a Sloan sound guy at the time. He had done work with them, so we recorded our first album, the self-titled one with the spaceship, and that was released probably in the early summer of 1996. And yeah, then we toured out west at one point. I think in that summer, we were supposed to tour with another Sonic Onion band called Smoother, and we drove our first show. I think was in Winnipeg. We drove all the way to Winnipeg, and then Smoother got there, and they're like, "We don't have any money to continue this tour." So they just turned around and went back, and we continued all the way out to Vancouver and played shows around. And then we came. You know, summer was busy in 1996. I think we recorded a video at some point for one of the songs on the album, and yeah, so we were just. It was just kind of go for a long time, you know, and we had always had good, you know, people out west didn't really, Sonic Onion I don't think was as popular out west, but we were part of that. You know, we were part of that. You know, that push to kind of, you know, move the label. Same way that the, like, you know, prairie bands and stuff like that weren't maybe, you know, not as well known in Ontario, and eventually, you know, everybody kind of hits the road, and we crossed paths with a bunch of bands on the way, and it was a fun time. We're all packed in a van, you know, making no money and smoking cigarettes and eating McDonald's pretty much, right? So
now you mentioned The Get Up, which was the single and the video off of the first record. Any memories about writing, recording the song, making the video? The video is still holds up in beautiful colors in it.
I don't think we're talking out of turn. I wouldn't be talking out of turn. I think all of us kind of always hated the video. It was kind of
Really?
Well, we didn't really have any control. We got a Factor grant to do a video, and we get connected with this film crew in Toronto. We sat down. I think you've seen it then, right? So like the first part was kind of our idea. Hey, why don't we all get kind of picked up in various places and then go play a show, kind of thing. But then the show we played was in a sewer with a bunch of sewer kids, and so it's pretty, like, it's kind of 90s. It was kind of silly. You know, looking back now, I think it's hilarious, and you know, lots of laughs. But you know, there's just, you know, like it says barf and snot, and it was just, we like to kind of separate ourselves from that. But I think this the woman that was the director, I think she maybe had done other videos, maybe for other bands like Pluto maybe or something like that. So we just kind of got connected with it. But it was 2 days in Toronto. You know, the first day was kind of all the outdoor scenes. You know, we had to go, you know, shopping for clothes and stuff like that. And then the second day they built this, that sewer in a studio. So we were like, we stood in water, like 6 inches of water all day long. And it was pretty funny, you know, we like makeup crews and kind of stuff like that. So, but the actual song would have been written by Tim with the riff. I can't remember if we demoed the songs before we did the album with Brendan, but I feel like Brendan might have, I think we kind of changed the key of the bridge at some point, you know, and I think it just, or maybe they changed the key of the song actually with, you know, when we actually recorded it. And that riff is pretty, I still play it when I'm noodling on my guitar. I think it's pretty iconic, and I, you know, kudos to Tim for pulling that one out, because there's something so simple about it, but so, like, you know, just endearing, and just, you know, one of those kind of, you know, it just lasts. It's like it just lives in your head kind of thing, so.
Down.
talk about making that second record.
You know, because the first record included a bunch of old stuff, you know, like we kind of pulled older songs that had been already released on other kind of other format, you know, like other kind of compilations, you know. So one of the old songs would have been like a triple jointed, and then even the Ham Fisted and Banner Year, we'd already put it on a 7-inch. So then the next record, it was kind of like, you know, we definitely had an idea of trying to, you know, create brand new music, you know. So it's hard, you know, starting from fresh. I'm in the band now where I'm, you know, I didn't, you know, where I write songs as well. So kind of trying to, you know, trying to push my my kind of songs as well onto the album, and there's a couple of them on Incognito, and then yeah, just you know, we were also playing a ton, you know, so we're kind of writing these songs and really kind of you know, working them out on the road and getting that kind of energy. So when we go into the studio, we knew the songs well, you know, so it was definitely a different process where we kind of wanted, there's some a little bit more jammy, you know. Again, we're on, you know, because we're playing live, and most of, you know, the early stuff when we were playing, it's, you know, we're really like 2 minutes, pop, 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 the song's done, you know. So, you know, yeah, we're trying to stretch it out. We're listening to different music, kind of different, bringing a different kind of influences into the mix. And so, I think that the second album is you know, that it kind of reflects that. We're also, for that one, we flew out to Calgary to record with Dave Alcock again, and so we were kind of, we only had, you know, we had a tight, you know, maybe 10 days, I can't remember, you know, but say we had 10 days, so we had to get the whole thing kind of recorded and done, because we weren't going to have that opportunity to kind of revisit it. And we're, you know, the band itself, you know, if you ever had the opportunity to see us, you know, if you know Mike, if you know Tim, they're like funny guys. So we were fucking around a lot, you know, just, you know, it's really, you know, we had a lot of fun, you know, we always had our fun just kind of hanging out. It was like this like club. So, you know, the dedication, you know, so we're, you know, we kind of had to be like, you know, we've got to get this done. And so they were long days, and, you know, lots of empty cases of that, what is that, old style Pilsner with the little bunnies on it. We were drinking lots of that, and we're just in the studio. We're actually in a actual studio, you know, with a console and a big window, and, you know, it was just wood, and, you know, it was definitely a different environment for us, because, you know, most of the stuff that we'd recorded before, you know, the first album was at Mike's basement. You know, other stuff that we recorded, 7-inches, were, you know, in people's houses where they're just kind of setting up in their basement or in their living room kind of thing. So it was kind of weird. This was a very, very kind of, you know, professional thing from our perspective. We flew out there. We didn't just drive all the way to Calgary, all that kind of stuff. And the studio was a, you know, it was an equipped studio. And, you know, there was lots of great amps and guitars that we got to kind of play around with and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was a neat process, you know. And we stayed at Dave's parents' house and hit the hot tub and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, and so it was a good time. It was fun. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but I feel like it was nice out. It wasn't winter. The last time we'd been in Calgary was winter time. So yeah, so it was a kind of fun, you know, hitting breakfast every morning and then going to the studio and just kind of going to work. So it was nice, you know.
I was unable to locate the writing credits of the records. I'm curious, which compositions are yours on the album?
Well, on Incognito, so yeah, we always just kind of did were all songs written by the new Grand, just, mm-hmm. you know, but, you know, it was right, usually right. Whoever was singing the song would be the writer of the song. So on Incognito, I have a song called Bona Fortuna, and I have a song called Lean, Clean, and Bluesy, and I have a song called I Desire the Credit. So I got three tracks on there, and yeah, so.
Talk a bit about that last one, Desire the Credit, because that was one of the ones that really stuck out for me on the album. I was putting that one on repeat a few times.
Oh yeah, you like that? That was just kind of, you know, I just write the, you know, kind of one of these, you know, longer song. Well, longer for us, it was over 3 minutes. Most of our songs, you know, as I said, are, you know, 2 minutes kind of, right? So it was a little bit longer, kind of some different, you know, I think it was probably, my style of writing was, you know, I tried to write to the new grand sound, but also try to kind of, there's definitely a Malcolm song, you know, and you know, and my, you know, my bandmates always kind of, they were always still puzzled by the lyric of, you know, I desire the credit, but I think I deserve it more. And they're like, what does that mean? And I'm like, I don't know what it means. You know, it's, you know, having to explain kind of song lyrics is kind of a bane of mine. So.
Supporting that record, I don't think there was a video for it.
I think at some point there was a, what do you call it, that we received a treatment, like kind of a somebody's idea of a video for the song, and we just didn't like the idea, so we were just kind of, we just didn't do a video for that song at all, or for that album. And then I think by that, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, maybe we should have jumped on it and then kind of maybe muscled our way into a better idea. But with the proposal to us, we were just, none of us were really into. And so, and I think that just kind of that, you know, passed. And once it's gone, you know, but we didn't know then. We were just young and snotty and, you know.
What song were they?
I feel like, you know what? don't remember. Maybe it was a Flair for Sex. But I don't remember, to be honest.
Right. Fair enough. And touring that record compared to the first one, was it a different experience or was it just more of the same?
Well, you know, from the first album, that was 96, and then we played like tons of shows in 97, and then that was recorded, I think it was released, what does it say, March 1998? So we must have, I don't remember exactly when we recorded it. But yeah, so then when we got that album out, then I think in the at that point we kind of got some, we played South by Southwest in 97 and 98, so there was definitely, we got some, like, you know, maybe, you know, and again with Sonic Onion and they're getting their name out there, that we got to kind of played New York City, you know, CMJ it was called, and we did a tour with Treble Charger, I believe, in the fall of we did a tour with Treble Charger, and so that was, you know, there, that was playing, you know, bigger shows, and so instead of playing the kind of the clubs that we would normally play, you know, whatever, you know, the call the offices of different towns, then with Treble Charger we're playing at the universities in their bigger rooms, that kind of stuff. So it was definitely a bigger crowd, you know, and so that was great, and it was great for them. Great to play with those guys, you know, with Treble Charger. They're fun to hang out with, and then I think on that tour that we got to play at we were on like Edmonton. I don't know what they call it. It was like the Edmonton's version of City TV, and we got to play that those shows as well. So, but you know, I could be just mixing up. This is what we do now. Like, you know, we're talking about stuff that happened. This is 25 years ago, right? So now when we get together, we, you know, there's, you know, with the four of us, and then, you know, others as well, kind of, we, you know, we kind of just sit together and just try to piece together the memories, you know, because, you know, we all have a different, you know, it's like just the way the memory works where, you don't, you know, we talk about an incident and we all have a different perspective on it, you know, so. Yeah, you know, traveling to, you know, with that, within the second album, we got to go to South by Southwest, and we got to travel to Austin, Texas. That was pretty awesome, you know, and played a lot more, played a lot more shows with, you know, shows with bigger bands that were kind of, touring, you know, I think maybe even before 97, we were playing, you know, shows with Thrush Hermit and the Monoxides that kind of world, you know. So we played a lot of shows with Sonic Onion bands. I don't know how familiar you are with Sonic Onion bands. We played a lot of shows with Tristan Psionic, mm-hmm. and who are kind of they're kind of Sonic Youthy, kind of, you know, a little post rock kind of vibe. Then and we played shows with Science Spheric, who are psychedelic, you know, space rock. And then this is all on the same bill. And then, yeah. Then it would be Shallow North Dakota, which was like the heaviest band ever. And then the New Grand, like on one bill. And it was just such a weird, that was the beauty of Sonic Onion, where like it wasn't, they weren't creating a sound. They were creating a movement or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, so we played these shows with those bands, and they were, like the New Grand followed by Shallow North Dakota makes no sense. Right. Oh, but they were, you know, those were great times. I loved listening to those bands, playing with them. We'll be right back.
So when you play a gig like South by Southwest, are you flying in for a one-off?
Both times we drove down. We drove down and, you know, at some point we got connected with a guy named Peter Rowan, who is from the East Coast. He was kind of working with us in a, you know, loosey-goosey way. I don't, you know, and he was a big supporter of us, and he was really trying to kind of get us to that, push us to a next level, you know. And so we had some introductions with people through him, but, you know, that never amounted really. At the end of the day, we met with some, you know, kind of, you know, record exec types, but we were probably never disciplined enough for something like that to you know, really kind of take off, you know. So, but yeah, he was a great part of you know, kind of that 97-98 version of the New Grand. I think he drove down with us to one of the South by Southwest. Maybe he didn't. Maybe. Oh no, he did. He totally did. I think I've got pictures. Yeah, he went down with us at one point. Yeah, we would go. We would play a one-off. Like, we'd play a show at Elmo Junior's. Maybe there might be a second. Like, I remember there was one, you know, you go to these kind of, they'd organize these kind of private parties. We might have played a second kind of Canada kind of band showcase somewhere. But yeah, we were just really going down for like one show, coming back. You know, we had a great time. Oh my God, that was Austin during South by Southwest was pretty amazing, you know, running into like just famous people, you know, at a party, and Woody Harrelson's there, you know. I'm out in the street, having a smoke, and there's a guy busking, and you're like kind of looking at him, and then a crowd starts forming around. I'm like, oh, that's Billy Bragg. You know, I didn't even realize it was him. You know, it was just kind of a guy just playing his guitar on the sidewalk, that kind of stuff, right? So it was pretty neat to be there back then. So, but yeah, we were definitely kind of doing it on our own dime. You know, it's not like there was a big payday or anything at the end of the day for us.
Talk about the struggles of trying to do it on your own dime without the backing of a major. It sounded like it was a big indie, but it still wasn't a major.
You know, they might have thrown us some money here and there. Probably, you know, maybe helped a little bit with the recording costs of the album. But really, you know, it was never a back then we might get $50 a show or $100 a show or maybe $200 a show. You know, might get a meal. You know, when we're on the road, we might, you know, get maybe a meal or maybe they'd put us up for a place to stay, but we slept on a lot of couches and a lot of couches and floors, and sometimes splurge for a hotel, and sometimes we'd sleep in the van, you know. Like, there was it's not like you know, like Sonic Onion were great, and they were great to just kind of be part of that. But they weren't like, you know, nobody was like throwing money at us or anything. You know, at some point, I remember at one point, we were coming back from one of our tours, our van like just totally bust. Like, the rad was just blowing blue smoke everywhere we drove. And I remember driving across a border, and the customs guards like, shut that off, because it's just like this billow of blue smoke. And, you know, we're like kind of scratching the last, you know, pennies out of our pocket just to get gas, just to get home, you know. So that was a payday thing involved, but we were never really, I don't know if we were really that motivated to even do that, you know. And I guess I think at the same time, we had there's lots of, you know, people in bands we know and friends who kind of did the major label route, and, you know, it was that era too where, like, you know, Sloan got they did Twice Removed and then gets dropped by the label and then they've broken up, you know. And so you just kind of hear rumblings of how, you know, none of it's, you know, cracked up to what it's supposed to be, you know. And it's not a great kind of, it sounds good, but at the behind the scenes, I think, is not as attractive, really. So I think we kind of had that in our mind. I think, you know, at the same time, I Thrush Hermit was they'd signed for one of their albums. Was it Sweet Home Wrecker? I think it was. Yeah, and same idea where kind of, you know, you just hear rumblings that it was it wasn't the greatest thing, you know. It's not like it was, you know, you don't get the support you want. So it's not, we met with some like, label exec types, but, we, you know, we were not, you know, those big shows where we'd have to play for somebody important, we'd totally choke. And like, and then like a show where we're just like a nobody, like on a bill in front of people, a crowd. You know, I remember a show in New York City, we did it, and it was just like, you know, I'm thinking back now, I'm like, we just like killed. It was awesome. Mm. It was just fun. The energy was perfect. You know, like just the kind of whole show, right? So it was always like the important shows, and then there's other times we'd just kill. So it's it was one of those things. But you know, also at the same time, we're all in school. Like we're all
right.
You know, at this point, you know, Mike was going to culinary school. I'm doing my undergrad. Tim's doing his undergrad. Pat was at Fanshawe doing a, you know, graphic arts program. So like we're doing this for, you know, kind of the you know, we love the lifestyle of it, of our, you know, being in this rock and roll band together. But I don't think that there was ever a real kind of, you know, idea that we're going to try to take it to a next level, because mm-hmm. we're a bunch of hacks too, you know, just doing our thing and being, you know, we're ridiculous. The group was ridiculous. We're just having fun. You know what I mean? So I still thank those guys for I'm like, whatever happened, I got mixed up in this, like, this legacy of the new Grand. And, you know, with the right people, the right time, age, you know, if interests, people know who we are, you know, and it's just kind of like, it's kind of funny, you know, but a lot of the early stuff, you know, like, you know, stuff on YouTube, that was just, that was just me kind of putting it up there just at the time, just because it was, you know, I'm like, it was sitting on a hard drive or something. I'm like, why, you know, people would ask about something and I'm like, I'll find a video for you. But, you know, it was a long, you know, I think now on YouTube, you can type in the new Grand and it comes up. But there was a time you had to type in like the new Grand, Sonic Onion, London, Ontario, to even find find the video kind of thing. You know what I mean? Where,
no, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we were talking earlier about the kind of, you know, there isn't a lot of stuff out there, but we were, you know, it was, it's not the, you know, we did this whole thing before cell phones and GPS and emails and all that kind of stuff, right? Like when we, you know, go to Austin, Texas, we've got a big paper map on the front, dashboard, or, you know, we're driving to we've got to find a place in downtown Chicago. You know, I'm reading the map, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was just to call home, it's like finding a payphone and making a collect call kind of thing, right? So it's I mean, I haven't done that post kind of, you know, modern world kind of touring like that, you know, but it'd be such a different thing, you know, such a different thing, you know.
Yeah,
it's funny to think about it, you know. So yeah, the whole, like, even like, I mean, there used to be a Wikipedia entry on the new Grand that I, like, this is, you know, I sit at a desk most of my days, so I get a little bored, and so I think I created a very, very fake, like, Wikipedia profile, and then all of a sudden, it's kind of like, I saw it referenced somewhere, I'm like, oh, shit, like, that's not, I just made stuff up, you know, and so I think I went back and edited it at some point, but then I think over the years somebody has, like, because you know how, like, on Wikipedia you can see kind of like the versions, and somebody went and corrected a bunch of stuff because I made up names and stuff like that. It was just I was just messing around, bored one day kind of thing. So
the Wikipedia to this day references an explosive live show.
That was my line that I did in my like when my stupid but we did have a kind of a good live show, you know. People liked us. It was Mike and Tim are like funny. They're funny. We have to be Canada's tallest band, you know. Like I'm 6'2" and Tim's 6'4" and Mike's like 6'5", 6'6". We're like, you know, and they were just characters and just really, you know, we always hated the kind of compliment. Well, you guys are really funny. We were funny, but like, you know, it was mixed in with some rock and roll stuff there, you know. So So don't refer. That's, you know, don't believe what you read all the time. So.
You mentioned one of the band members was a artist, a graphic artist. Was he responsible for the second cover?
No, that was actually a friend of ours. That was a friend of ours. But Pat, like in the, he's always doodling. There's tons of stuff around that he would. So I think back prior to my joining, the New Grand used to do like a New Grand newsletter, and Pat would do all the drawings, and he definitely has a style. I don't know if he did. You know, I don't think he did any of the covers of any of the 7 inches. I don't know. I don't think he did. Maybe there was an insert or something on one of them. He works for the provincial government, and he does graphic design for them. So it's funny how those doodles turn into a career. So
I love the artwork, though. It's so dignified. The second album.
Yeah, we kind of had a vision. There was, there's a couple of things where that was inspired by just the four heads, right? And it was, I think one of them was like the, cover of, maybe the album Bread, Greatest Hits. And then there's also an insert to a CCR album that I had four heads as well. So that's where some of that came from.
So I think you kind of alluded to it, but it was just school. Is that what kind of brought the end of the band?
We were busy, 95, 96, 97, 98, and I think Pat was getting a little kind of, we were playing in Toronto, and you load out at, 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then it's a 2-hour, we're getting home at 3, 3:30 in the morning all the time, and then Pat was just kind of getting a little, at some point you're kind of going, you're playing for empty rooms sometimes, or it's just not, you're playing with bands that you don't really want to do. And I think we just kind of, it was more of a fizzled out in a way, like in the sense that we were working on a third album. We had songs written for not an entire album, but we were working on it. And then Pat decided he just was kind of didn't want to do those late nights anymore. Pat's the kind of quiet guy in the band that would constantly kind of gets the ribbing from the three of us, and so he probably just got sick of our shit. But yeah, so there was no like animosity or anything. He's just like, I don't want to do this anymore, So with in 98, I'm 22, those guys would be 23, kind of thing. So yeah, so it was just kind of it didn't really, it was a slow burn. Again, there was no real animosity. We spent almost a year auditioning for a new drummer, and then we played one show, and then we're like, yeah, we're not gonna, at this point where, I'm kind of starting to do more things on my own, like more just kind of recording with buddies, just like kind of, solo stuff. Mike had started kind of a new band with, there was a bit of overlap kind of thing. So it was just, we kind of got tired of it. And then it got to the point where we're like, we've got a show in somewhere with somebody, and one of us, and it could have been me, it could have been, I was just kind of like, I don't feel like going, I don't feel like doing that. And I think at one point we were driving somewhere, our van broke on the highway, and we were just like, screw it. And we just didn't even, I think we had a bunch of shows booked with one band, and we were like, no, we're not going to do it, kind of thing. So we just got a little. We had like a good, really good three and a half years of just go. But it just became kind of like, we're not going to push it to the next level. What are we actually doing? I don't know. It was just kind of, got a different interest. And then by that point, we were finishing up school. I was finishing up school. There was no animosity, and really, but it was just, we did get together again in 2003 to play like a benefit for CHOW, which is our radio station here, Radio Western, at Western University. And that was the last time that we played together live. Like, we get together these days, at least once a year, but we did definitely take a hiatus. And then Mike and Tim and Pat at some point, and I don't know exactly when, moved to Toronto. And then Mike ended up start playing with a band called Pasomino, which was Bahamas and Zeus. I don't know if you know those two bands, and they were on the road for a while, with Jason Collette, and played with Amy Milan, and kind of a Feist tour for a while. So he was kind of doing that for a long time.
Before we kind of move on to current day stuff, any kind of final thoughts on the 90s in Canada or your time within them?
But I would say, like, just coming to London and call the office was, I've seen a billion bands. And there was a time when bands, there's no band that anybody knows of, you know, that didn't play Call the Office, you know, and you can't see them all, but I've seen, you know, lots and lots of stuff. So it was kind of just one of those destination spots kind of on your way to Toronto, you know, definitely, you know, especially coming from the western side of Canada. So, and the eastern side of Canada, I mean, obviously, but yeah, Call the Office was just such a lucky spot to be involved in. And so, yeah, you know, we went there all the time. And it was. I always thought it was kind of weird when the kind of internet world came around, and then all of a sudden bands are becoming huge. Canadian bands becoming huge. Like for example, like an Arcade Fire. I'm like, they got big, and I'm like, you never played Call the Office. How did you? You know, it was just there's something that seemed a little kind of insincere about it in a way. I was just glad that it existed, and we also had the Embassy here as well, which was another like, you know, big destination spot, but it closed a lot earlier than Call the Office and burned down at some point. So that's the way of the world sometimes. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's just been a great kind of, you know, I've seen so many bands. We crossed paths with so many great people, you know, over the years that, and some, you know, go on to become, you know, kind of big deals kind of thing, you know, but it was always, you know, there's definitely it's a moment in time that, you know, it's just that privilege of my life that I was just there, you know, and I'm just happy to be a part of it. And I, you know, your podcast, I've listened to many of the episodes, and some of it's great to just kind of, I people that I have played with, I think I reached out to, what's his name, Lonnie James, because he was in the Super Friends, and we would have played shows with them, and I was just like, and he had great stories, you know, with the Nils, I think, and all that kind of stuff, and you're like, wow, what, you know. You know, a lot of times you're crossing paths with these people, you meet in the band room, you know, like you might have a chat kind of thing, but it's different to kind of hear the inside scoop, you know. So somebody like Thresher, but Joel Plaskett, I saw him for the first time when I was probably 16 or 17 in Ottawa, and then maybe a few days later he's in Kingston. I saw him in Kingston, and then, you know, a week later I was on a school trip. This is probably my last year of high school. School trip to New York City, and my teacher let me. First thing I do is I pull out the entertainment kind of news, and I see that Thresher is playing, and so I'm like, my teacher, I'm like, can we go to this, me and my buddy? And he's like, yeah, like it wouldn't happen now. So he let us like cab to a club in New York called Irving Palace, and Thresher is playing, opening up for, I believe it was All, and so I see Joel, I'm like, hey, I just saw you in Ottawa and Kingston. And we were like kind of chatting kind of thing. And then the next time I see him, I'm, you know, playing a Sonic Onion Christmas show or something. And I'm like, hey, Joel, remember, you know, I mentioned, so, you know, like somebody I've known now for a huge chunk of my life. So those kind of rock and roll connections kind of thing. Right. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Now fast forward to 2024. You have a new record coming out called Under the Delicate Arch moniker.
Yeah. So I've been writing songs since I first started playing guitar. That's just kind of, it was kind of a crutch because I can never remember other people's songs. And so I've been writing songs for years. And, you know, after the new Grand kind of like took our little, you know, our we fizzled out a little bit. I went to law school. I have, you know, had kids. The other guys, we all started our careers and kids. And I still always kind of continued to write songs. And, you know, every once in a while, I had a buddy out of Chatham now, his name's Ben Strokas, and he I just go there on a Saturday and record some songs. And then it was, you know, over the years, I didn't play live at all until maybe about 2015, met a buddy of mine who played around kind of like just acoustic stuff in around town. And so, you know, I showed him some of my songs. He's like, oh, you got to start playing with me. So I started playing with my buddy Jim McDonald around town. And we ended up starting a little band, and then that ended. And so, you know, at this point now, it's, you know, by 2021, you know, I've got a whack of songs. And another friend of mine who plays around, his name's Richard Gracious. And he, you know, he's got a little home studio, and he's like, Let's record one of those songs. There's one particular song on the album that he wanted to record called I Wish I Was 24. And so we do that. And then, so the next, you know, it's like, well, I've got another one. So I show him, he's like, let's do that. You know, so it really was just him and I for a big chunk of it, he would play the drums and the keyboards, and I'd do all the kind of the strings and the bass. It's a rock album, but it was really just the two of us. And then I'd get, you know, after time thing, you get a little bored. So, you know, I have lots of friends in this town. I've been in London now for 30 years, and you know, I'm like, and I'm a lawyer, so buddy calls me up for some, like, hey, I got a question, you know. I'm like, help him out kind of thing. And he's like, what do I owe you? I'm like, I don't know, buy me a beer sometime.
Right, right.
Then I'm like, hey, remember that time I gave you some, that, you know, he asked me, he's like, yeah. I'm like, do you want to do a guitar solo on this album I'm working on? Oh, yeah. So it comes over, rips out a guitar solo. You know, and then so I started kind of like, okay, so now I'm doing this. And then I start bringing in kind of like just friends. I've already got kind of the song down. Hey, I need you to kind of like, you know, I need you to, you know, can you play mandolin or whatever it is, drums on this one song. And then, you know, now all of a sudden I've got like an album forming, and so, you know, I kind of booked it. Like, some people like asked me to play some shows, and do you have a band? I'm like, oh yeah, I have a band, but I didn't really, you know, but I had some friends that I knew that I could kind of rely on. So then, you know, I call, you know, my friend Shiraz, who was kind of the last drummer. Shiraz Ibrahim was the last drummer in the New Grand. And, you know, friends with him forever. I'm like, Shiraz, if I do a band, if I play live, can you drum? He's like, yeah, cool. So then, and also my friends Marianne Griffith and Mark Vandergoot, they're bass, my bass player and guitar player. So I'm like, hey, do you guys, you know, here's some songs. So all of a sudden, the delicate arch name that I'm kind of recording under is now a band. So we actually did, as the four piece, we did a couple of songs on the album. Probably the last two we recorded, and that was kind of like, okay, that's the album. So then I've got to playing shows with them. You know, we've only played three times, you know, like since the summer. Because I've been really focusing on the album stuff, and I like will sometimes do kind of a acoustic, you know, some, you know, kind of performance, you know, if I prefer the band, you know, to play with the rock and roll, but you know, I've opened up for a DOA singer, Joey Shithead, back in the fall, kind of thing, you know, hey, can you open up for him? Okay, so I'm playing my, like, you know, my delicate arch songs, and he's playing his old punk stuff. So now there's this band, and now there's this album, and then I had to kind of put it together so that it gets mixed. And then I have, you know, Andy McGoffin, who was in the 2 Minute Miracles, he masters it. I get some friends to help, you know, artwork and that kind of stuff. So, you know, like, and then, you know, I've got my kids are all very musical. Try to kind of include them in the process.
Nice,
so
nice.
If you've listened to the album, well, like, my son is in Montreal, and he kind of took one of my songs and kind of deconstructed it into this kind of synth thing. He's like, hey, listen to what I did. I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. So he did kind of two different versions of it. So that is actually the opening and closing of the album. There's these synth tracks. I got him involved, and, you know, he's on that too. I'm like, it's going on the album, you know? And so it's kind of a neat little, like, almost like a Garth Hudson band kind of Chest Fever kind of synth sound, just to kind of open it up. And so, yeah, so that's on the album. Then my youngest, she does her art is on the cover.
Nice.
I found it in an envelope, this like thing project she'd done at school. I'm like, oh, I'm kind of like, I'm putting this aside, you know? And so I kind of put aside, then I've ended up, you know, I got a buddy to kind of help me lay it. I'm not a graphic arts guy, so it's just even fonts and that kind of stuff was just way outside of my skill set. So then, yeah. And then I've got a buddy in town here. I was telling about the record. He's an old neighbor of mine. He was a teenager when I lived beside him when my son was born. So I was telling about this. He's like, oh, I've got a record label with a friend of mine in Guelph. We'll release the album. And I'm like, okay, cool. So, yeah, so we've just doing the whole process of, because I wanted to do it on vinyl. Once I started the project, I'm like, I want a vinyl release. It's, I mean, the idea of a CD release, I don't even, as I said earlier, I don't even own a CD player. So, you know, I wanted a vinyl release. So we've kind of gone through the process of doing that. And I just got a text that they're on their way. So, we've got it pressed out in BC. So they're going to be sending it out. And I've kind of created some liner notes and going to stuff some records soon. And then, so I'm going to be doing my album release on April 27th at the Palisades Social Bowl here in London, which is kind of a new, it's a bowling alley, but now it's become a real kind of music hub thanks to the promoter there. So
Is there a song that you wanted to highlight, maybe introduce people to the Delicate Art?
You know, I think Up All Night is the kind of, you know, the first track on the my track, parking the Max's little synth part there in the front. But yeah, Up All Night it's a song I think I'm proud of, you know, and that's the thing where after I'm all done, I'm like, oh, you know what, I'm actually like all this stuff, you know, sometimes you cringe at what you listen to or like what you've done kind of thing. And so it was kind of took me a long time to be a solo artist, like as the main singer, you know, like I've never been the main guy in any band. I like to kind of, you know, do my thing on the side, but here I had to kind of be front and center. So yeah, I'd start with Up All Night.
And I was up all night, and I called you first thing in the morning, and it was out of sight, and I was out of line. And I'm sitting here, I'm gonna drink another sip of this beer, and I was up all night, and I called you first thing in the morning. There's some things that I said that I should have kept to myself. Some words are better left up on the shelf. I know things ain't right, but I didn't come here to fight. And I was up all night, and I called you first thing in the morning.
Now, when you step into the mic as a front man, do you have to do anything different to your voice? Do you have to train it in any kind of way?
It took me a long time to find my voice that I was kind of like happy with singing, you know? So, and as you get older, like even like when we, you know, the new grand gets together once a year now, like we get together probably usually late August for like the last 5 years or so, where we have kind of a barbecue, we jam, we get lit up, and we just have fun, you know, and we just laugh our guts out. So even when then, like, I try to go and, like, sing some of those old songs that I, you know, like, part of it is, like, most of our jamming is just trying to remember how the songs went, because it's, you know, it's been 25 years. But, yeah, like, yeah, sure. My voice, my register was definitely a lot higher. pushing it, and it, like, I can't do that now. So I sing, definitely, it took me a while to find my voice that I'm happy with, that I can kind of really just, like, sing a whole set and not go hoarse, you know, so.
So final question. Now, I have a playlist on Apple and Spotify of all 90s Canadian rock. And I'm asking all the guests to contribute 3 songs to the playlist. So how would you like the new Grand to be represented on the playlist?
You know, I think, well, you know, it's funny. There's, it was hard to do just to pick 3 songs, mm-hmm. but I feel like I would go with, let me think here. Maybe Yours Truly. Mm-hmm. And which is a Mike song, and then Ampersand, which is off of Incognito, which is a Tim song, and then the Get Up as well, which is another Tim song from the first album. So, but I mean, there's a lot of them. I've actually created a Dropbox folder of like a new Grand Archives, because I got everything I could. I had actually kind of digitized and. So I've circulated around the with the guys, and we've chatted about the songs. You're like going, "Oh yeah, that's, you know, it's so, you know, that song rips," you know. So, you know, especially the early stuff. They're very, like, before I was in the band, some of it's just like so snotty and just like fun, you know. And like it's just got this like energy that's it's really hard to, you know, as now as a 47, 48 year olds, it'd be pretty hard to recreate that kind of energy, right? So,
right,
you know.
There's so many great songs from the band. Prove Me Wrong is another one that could have been a big, big video song.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was lucky to kind of just, you know, be with these, like, great songs. They wrote these really great, you know, melodies, great songs. I mean, this, the third album that never happened, mm-hmm. you know, I think I have probably some, like, 4-track kind of, like, you know, or just, you know, just kind of, like, recording band practice kind of stuff. And I remember some stuff there that you're kind of going, like, they were just starting to get a little bit more sophisticated, but still had that kind of like that kind of new Grand kind of zip to it, which were great, you know. But you know, some things will just they'll just, you know, they're part of history now. So,
and the Squirt Gum, that was a different label than,
yeah,
one of those kind of singles.
Yeah, that was just there's a guy in Toronto who had his own label, and he just kind of, you know, with Sonic, yeah, Sonic Onion, we weren't just like, we weren't exclusive to them. So we released stuff on Squirt Gun. Over the same time, we had friends that put out a 7-inch called Twisted, and it was with the New Grand and Super Friends and Zumpano and Chetacamp. We put out a 7-inch out of Quebec City with a band called the Mini Pops. So we were, you know, we kind of put some stuff out there. It's funny, actually. It was a buddy of mine. I know we're kind of wrapping up here, but a buddy of mine just texted me. He's like in, like, just in the last month or so, he's in Seattle or Portland, in like on the West Coast, and you know, he's like, look what I found. He's like pulling out his new Grand 7-inches. So I mean, they traveled, you know. So it was, you know, it's definitely something that's that I'm definitely proud of. I'm so glad to be be part of. You know, it was a great time. You know, you never know that you're in the great times until when you look back at them, right? Like when back then we're just like in a van driving to Burlington or something, you know, like we're just kind of, you know, being, you know, bitching about it or whatever. But looking back now, you're like, oh man, it was so amazing, you know, that we did that we had that ability to do that. And then, you know, that kind of the roads were there for us to kind of travel and follow other people's paths, you know, like the rock and roll roots of Canada. So it was just definitely, it was great to be part of, you know, and I don't think you can replicate that now in a way, you know, just the time and just the bands and the promoters and the clubs and just the scene, you know. There's just it's just a definitely a different era. You know, there was a really neat little music scene in London back then, you know, with a bunch of bands. There was Bubblegun Records was one of the local kind of one of our songs went on a compilation there at some point. So yeah, there's just definitely the time and place, you know. In Ottawa was a weird kind of scene, because it was like you've got, like, there was punk, it was kind of, there's also like the kind of Quebec influence, and so like the Quebec punk was always just like a little, like, it was out there, you know, kind of a little bit more crazier, a little bit more, you know, it was definitely a I don't know, moving to London, I think people were a little bit more like kind of, you know, image conscious, you know. They wanted to be part of a scene in a way, where Ottawa was just like a little bit more, just different. Nobody, you know, I don't know, that's where you've got bands like Furnace Face and something, where they're just kind of like, they're not, you know, they're not cut from any of the same wool that other bands were doing at the same time, right? So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about your experience in the 90s and the new Grand and the new record. So it's been fantastic.
That's awesome. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I know you and I have been chatting about this for a while, right?